This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Welcome to Layla Weighs In. Thank you for joining me every week, downloading these podcasts on Intelligent Medicine. I welcome your questions, topics of interest. You can email me to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. I want to talk to you about some interesting studies I've read about here. This one is about GI, digestive, immune system. Same gut bacteria can trigger varying immune responses. So you and I can have the same gut bacteria, the same microbiota for the most part, but because we're individuals, can trigger varying immune responses. A study reveals that the type of immune response triggered by gut bacteria depends on the health of the individual environment in the gut. Interesting. A team of researchers from a variety of academic institutions in the U.S. teamed up to perform a study on gut bacteria and immune responses. They determined a certain type of gut bacteria stimulates varying immune responses, and that the type of response triggered by the bacteria hinges on the state of the environment, meaning the environment in our gut. And the study details results were recently outlined in Science Immunology. If you want to look for that, Science Immunology is where it was published. So, you know, and I've talked about our microbiota countless amounts of times, but it's not just a topic in vogue. We are literally in scientific research, this is just the tip of the iceberg on what we're finding out about gut bacteria, what we will be finding out. We are a superorganism. As a host, we are a superorganism for these trillions of bacteria. Imagine, there is more flora in our gut, trillions, more than there are cells in our bodies. Wrap your mind around that. Anyway, so we human beings have countless types of gut bacteria in our bodies, right? Not just the beneficial stuff, the lactobacillus, the bifidobacterium, but others. And the vast majority of these gut bacteria types are helpful. For the most part, they perform functions like helping the body digest specific foods, right? However, other types of bacteria can find their way into the gut and spur problems like ulcer, colitis, or ulcerative colitis, and cancer. So this research team looked at Helicobacter pylori, in depth. If you remember from last week, I talked about the continuing surge in celiac disease and how H. pylori was being treated with a triple antibiotic therapy that caused more problems than solutions. So this research team looked at Helicobacter, this bacteria genus that is believed to be a possible contributor to the creation of ulcers, as well as other health issues in the gut. And that's why Helicobacter is treated. The researchers studied what happened to mice when bacteria was placed in their guts. The researchers varied the conditions to gain a more in-depth understanding of how the introduction of bacteria affected the mice when certain conditions were changed. And what they found, researchers determined that introducing the bacteria into the guts of healthy mice that were raised in as germ-free of an environment as possible created an immune response typically linked to tolerance. Interesting. Okay. Previous research suggested this response is the body's means of signaling the acceptance of bacteria in the gut as it doesn't pose a threat. And this depends on your health. These mice were healthy. The same style of bacteria was placed in the gut of a mouse where colitis exists. It caused an immune threat response. This occurred as the bacteria caused already existing inflammation of the gut to worsen. It is clear the immune system considered the bacteria to be a harmful presence that must be halted. So you see, the health of our gut has everything to do with the type of response we're going to get. We can have all kinds of beneficial bacteria present. However, it really depends on the health of the gut to begin with. And why do these results matter? They matter because they suggest at least one type of bacteria might be seen as harmful or harmless based on the state of the environment it's placed in. This suggests the same phenomenon might occur with other types of bacteria. The finding has the potential to lead to an improved understanding of the role bacteria play in the body's gut biome as well as its health. The hope is that medical researchers will eventually use these findings to develop better treatments for those who are plagued with stomach maladies. So, more studies need to be done, as usual. However, the study does have the potential for us to be better informed about the role the bacteria, the gut biome, the body's gut biome matters. Now, what can vary between your gut bacteria, my gut bacteria, our individual microbiota? Depends on A, the state of our health, the state of our gut. How healthy is your gut? How healthy is mine? Has anybody been on antibiotics? That will change the gut microbiome. In fact, it may cause, as it does kill off bad bacteria, then there is space available for opportunistic bacteria like yeast, C. difficile, which is known to cause chronic, almost intractable diarrhea in many people. And I've seen many who have been on an antibiotic therapy and they wind up with C. diff. Whether it was an oral course of antibiotics that they took at home or something they had in the hospital. And of course, people do catch C. diff in the hospital. But I believe hospitals are getting better at that. So it's important to maintain the health of your gut. That includes, of course, a healthy diet. Exercise has everything to do with the way our gut functions as well in terms of peristalsis, our metabolism, and eating, micronutrient-rich foods, beneficial proteins, vegetables, fruits, all of the above, clean and organic, eating probiotic foods. Sometimes it's a kombucha tea, sometimes it's a lactic acid fermented sauerkraut and pickles. Kimchi is one of my favorites still. I have two different types in my refrigerator, the spicy kind and the less spicy kind. I love them both. And that liquid in there of the less spicy, the Napa cabbage, the white Napa, not spicy, that liquid in there to me is equivalent to champagne. It is delicious. I could drink the jar. I could. Anyhow, Moving on to another study. Protein 3 times daily to sustain senior strength. Now, I've written about sarcopenia in the past. We talk a lot about osteopenia, osteoporosis, but you know what happens prior to that often is sarcopenia. Sarcopenia is the diminishing of muscle. And why does that muscle diminish as we get older? No, it's not because we get older. It's because we move around less, we exercise less, and we tend to eat differently. We tend to eat less protein. We tend to rely more maybe on convenience foods, all of that. Now, eating protein at all 3 meals may help seniors stave off muscle decline. There is new research that shows consuming protein during each daily meal might help senior citizens maintain their strength. Now, unfortunately, many seniors and people in other age cohorts often save their daily protein consumption for dinner. Now, they may do this for various reasons. Their dinner is what they may be cooking at home or eating out, or in an effort, if you're busy, you're opting more for more convenience foods rather than cooking your chicken or your fish or your steak for lunch. You'd rather do that at dinner. Anyhow, this study was performed by Canadian researchers. They found meals rich in protein, evenly spaced out throughout the day, reduced muscle decline. However, spreading out protein consumption throughout the day did not improve seniors' mobility. Hey, the way to get more mobility is to stay mobile. That means exercise has to be a daily part of our lives. We need active lives, whether it's going out, doing all the grocery shopping, if you're a golfer, not using a cart, walking, carrying that bag, doing strength training 2 to 3 days a week, working alternate muscle groups. This will maintain our strength and maintain our mobility. Yoga, which I'm a big fan of, will help you in this as well and increase your flexibility. The way to improve mobility is to not become immobile. And that means regular physical activity. For those who have been immobile for a while due to accident or disability, physical therapy is the first thing to do. All right. So, muscle protein is not static. It's highly dynamic. It moves up and down with little stagnation. It's active living tissue, just like our bone. Muscle protein is regularly broken down only to be built right back up. And that happens with use. And that happens even more, or on a higher scale, with strength training. What we're doing with strength training is we're breaking down that muscle by stressing it by lifting weight. And then that muscle, those micro tears in muscle, are built right back up. But we need protein to support that. So protein is necessary for this phenomenon to occur. And it's true for people of all ages. However, muscle protein is more inclined to break down than build up later in life. And I believe, ladies and gentlemen, that this has more to do with our becoming more sedentary as we get older and eating differently, possibly even eating less calories. I'll tell you, I have two types of patients that I recommend protein shakes to, and it's not my regular healthy patient who has just come to see me to optimize, but everything is good, their appetite's in the right place, their gut is functioning well, they're good exercisers, they eat well, they're getting adequate amounts of protein in their diet. I don't recommend a protein shake for them. And some of them will go, well, I'd like to have some kind of protein drink after I work out. Go eat your lunch. Go eat your dinner. Go eat a steak and a salad. Have some grilled chicken on a bit of arugula or with some sautéed spinach. That's what you eat. Eat some salmon and asparagus. There you go. You don't need the shake. I prefer you chew your food. I do, however, will suggest whey protein powders or other vegetarian type or egg protein powders to my very elite athletes who need the additional protein, and for my very elderly, fragile patients who aren't getting adequate calories or protein, I like to help them out with some more protein in their diets. So, this team tracked about 1,700 fairly healthy men and women in Quebec across 3 years. This is a Canadian study. The study participants were between the ages of 67 and 84. Each provided dietary information and underwent annual arm, hand, and leg strength testing. These participants were also tested to determine if their mobility had changed. The research team determined men and women suffered worsening physical performance across the 3 years. Remember, this age group between 67 and 84. Participants' muscle strength decreased more than their mobility. However, the participants who spaced out their protein consumption across the usual 3 daily meals retained more muscle strength. We need those amino acids to build back up muscle. Yet they did not enjoy better motility than those who consumed the majority of their protein later in the day. So what's the moral of this story? The researchers are adamant that seniors should make a concerted effort to consume sufficient protein in 3 meals every single day. Saving a protein-packed food for dinner will not suffice. Insufficient protein and the failure to consume protein across the day's entirety has the potential to prevent the building of muscle and consequently reduce senior strength. And that's phase one on the way to frailty. That's what we don't want. We want to be as independent well into our senior years. So the researchers believe better distributed muscle protein, well-distributed protein, rather, could be connected to improved physical performance and a reduction in seniors' rate of decline. Now, remember that plenty of seniors endure harsh falls due to lack of lower body and core strength. This is important. And I tell everybody, even those who hate exercise, 3 mornings a week, get up and do squats, deep knee bends. 3 mornings a week, not consecutive. You need a day off in between. Do squats to fatigue. And for those of you with balance issues, use a chair to help brace yourself. 2 chairs that you can hang on to, or the kitchen counter, or something like that, so you can brace yourself and do deep knee bends. This is great for lower body strength. Yoga and Pilates are great for core strength. So, however, the researchers are quick to note, the study has not pinpointed a direct cause and effect between spacing out protein consumption and enjoying improved muscle strength. This is not a cause and effect. That would require much more scientific rigor. Rather, the research team observed an association between protein consumption distribution and muscle strength. This means it can't be concluded that older individuals enjoyed greater strength simply because they consumed protein at an even distribution across each meal of the day. Additional research will have to be performed to establish proof. However, the researchers noted the study's findings held up well when varying amounts of protein were consumed. Well, let me back up that, first of all, we know for at least a decade now that somebody in their 50s and 60s and beyond need double the RDA of protein than somebody in their 20s. So what is the RDA for protein? 0.8. Right? Or so, 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. It should be double. It should be 1.6, maybe 1.2 for some. So take a 130-pound woman. We translate into the kilograms by dividing that 130 by 2.2. We get 59 kilos for this 130-pound woman. And if she gets, say, 1.2 grams of protein for each kilogram of body weight, which is a good rule. It's better than the 0.8. It's not as high as the 1.6. 1.2 is pretty decent. So when you add that up, the 1.2 grams of protein per kilo at 59 kilograms equals almost 71 grams of protein. You divide that up over three meals, you get approximately 23 grams of protein a meal. It's helpful. So, the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture dietary guidelines advise those beyond the age of 50 to eat between 5 and 7 ounces of protein each day. I like 10 or 12 a little better. You figure an ounce of protein contains, let's see, an ounce of protein contains about 6 to 7 grams of protein. So an ounce. And you do the math on the rest. That's really it. So, and when we talk about high biological value protein, a medium to large size egg is about 6 to 7 grams of protein. An ounce of chicken, fish, or meat is 6 to 7 grams of protein. These are all helpful. The other complementary proteins play a part. Seeds, nuts, that kind of thing. So all of it is helpful. Eating higher protein as we get older, a good idea. Maintaining that with an active lifestyle, that's a recipe for maintaining your independence throughout old age. Now, if that's not quality of life, I don't know what is. Thank you for joining me on another Layla Weighs In podcast here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.